2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This, indeed you are, Paul,
is... in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect. I'm Andy Farnsworth from KSL News Radio and KSL's movie show. And joining me this time is Dan Spindle from KSL TV, our old friend Dan back. Yes, we're back with a new episode. And of course, if Dan's here, it could only be one of two things, usually one of one thing. And
listen, I'm multidimensional and multifaceted, but...
but today
I probably prefer to talk about Star Wars.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk about. And specifically... a very specific part of Star Wars. Yeah, I'd just like to hear that drum beat for just a quick second as we get going.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about The Mandalorian Season 3. It's been a while since we talked Star Wars, Dan, so we got, was it eight? Eight episodes, right?
Yes.
We got eight more episodes of The Mandalorian. Other Star Wars that's come out since we've last talked, The Bad Batch, we got a whole... second season of The Bad Batch, which, we're not going to talk about The Bad Batch so much.
I hear I should watch it. Now, I have nothing against The Bad Batch because I really enjoyed the first season, and I enjoyed The Bad Batch on those final Clone Wars episodes that they released, a couple years ago now. But I haven't watched this season yet. And I the Star Wars fans, I just haven't watched it yet. I don't know why I haven't, but I haven't. So my kids are a little annoyed because they kept watching it week after week. Dad, you got to watch it, because they wanted to talk about it. So I won't be much help on that. We'll cover as much as we can.
Well, and I only really want to bring up The Bad Batch. I mean, The Bad Batch, it continues, Dave. I guess we're starting to talk about The Bad Batch. Free-flowing conversations are always so fun.
Sure.
But The Bad Batch, to me, it's something that I enjoy. Not all episodes are of the same quality. I remember talking about you with this as I was watching it.
Yeah.
Some feel like they matter more than others. That can be said for any show, in The Bad Batch's defense. But some feel like they matter more in the Star Wars universe. Some of them are just getting to know the characters better. I'm not against getting to know characters better, if only because... that's one of the complaints about series that are movies only, is you get 2 hours to know the characters and you
right.
got to tell a story that makes it worth your time investing 2 hours at once. But with TV shows, you can take a half an hour here, half an hour there. Oh, let's have a story where it's just this person alone and not much else happens with the other characters. So
right.
it allows you kind of to have a richer feel. For better or worse, it's kind of what they did with the Book of Boba Fett. We got some with Boba and some with Din.
And to talk about Star Wars animation specifically as well, it's always been that way with the Clone Wars, which was always very high quality. The animation, the storytelling, it felt big, it felt epic, and yet some of the stakes weren't as high. Some of the storylines weren't as interesting. And then you get things like, you know, the Mortis trilogy, where it's, you know, the very origins of the Force, and it's, you know, fascinating, deep, great, deep dives into Star Wars. But the same thing with Rebels, the same thing with Resistance, which I really didn't get into that much. But there is
a lot of episodes of Resistance, and I gave that one felt like it was for like 10-year-olds.
Yeah, fluff maybe.
Like the new Jedi thing that came out on Disney Plus.
Right, the little
where it's
Jedi
like little
children,
Jedi kids, but, and yeah. like a Han Solo type kid. And
sure,
I mean, look,
they're casting
a
wide net.
There's a place for that.
Yeah. Now, again, and we're talking about the main series shows now that are kind of the staples of Disney Plus, and I try to tell myself that this is weekly Star Wars. This
yes.
is weekly episodic. content in a galaxy far, far away. And so I'm trying to enjoy every episode. There are little things here and there that I don't love. And we've talked about a lot of them in the past. You know, if you've got Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers chasing around Mini Leia, and you've got on Book of Boba Fett this speeder bike gang with these shiny out of world, you know, speeders that don't seem to belong on Tatooine. I mean, sure, there are little issues to address, but as far as being a Star Wars fan, you know, most of the time I'm pinching myself. Most of the time I'm enjoying the ride. Most of the time I love living in that universe and that realm. You know, and again, Andor was more heavy on the dialogue and slow moving plot, but really heavy on the acting and great performances and monologues. When this season of The Mandalorian started off, right out of the gate, it was, look how many creatures and colors and worlds we can kind of throw into this.
Yes.
Which, you know, kind of blew your mind. And so I get it that there's a place for all of it. So, I mean, I'm trying to anyway. It doesn't mean I won't be critical, and it doesn't mean I won't say stuff and my kids will go, what? Did you not like that? And I'll say, no, I didn't like it. And then, you know, I'll still go back to it.
The more Star Wars content that we get, it's almost like, because it was so scarce for a while, I look back at myself and how I reacted to everything, and there was a part of me that was like, I'm going to like this no matter what.
Yeah.
And I do, and I'm not backtracking, because anytime you have 9 episodes in a 3 trilogy set, they're going to just fall naturally into an order of which ones you like the best. Now, whether I like A New Hope more than Return of the Jedi, that can change over time. Like,
oh, man.
They may slip and change in the rankings based on how you're feeling at the time, what you know, how you remember experiencing it. I have Attack of the Clones way higher on the list than a lot of people, and maybe a lot of people who started watching the prequel trilogy after the sequel trilogy came out. Just because the circumstances around it, I got to go see it a week before it came out. This was before I got to do this as a regular thing.
Yeah, that would have been exciting.
It was. It was to the point where I lost sleep. I kept dreaming that I went to the wrong place or that I slept too
oh,
late.
No.
I didn't sleep the night before, and getting through work that morning was torturous to get to 10 a.m. so I could go over to the movie theater. But then the experience that I had watching it was so cool. So, but it was added to with the extra excitement and getting to see it early and all that stuff. So maybe I would have a more critical eye depending on if I was at a different age, if I was older, if I'd watched more stuff. But at that moment, it was, I remember how I felt leaving the theater. And so I rank it higher based on that, not necessarily the green screen quality versus later, you know, stuff that you can, that maybe a lot of different fans feel more strongly about that. I don't, but,
all of it affects the way
though,
you experience
now,
Star Wars.
As we get more and more content, we become more, I don't know, maybe older fans like us are more jaded. We've seen more. We've been around more. You know, stuff can happen in your life that either makes Star Wars a better escape or something that you really look forward to as an escape to, you know, maybe something rough you're going through. Or it can suddenly, a life event can happen that can make you to where, like, why did I care about Star Wars so much in the first place? So all those things factor in. So,
well, there's nothing to compare it to either. Where we're going in this world of content creation, like you said, it was doled out as films in the theater. George Lucas decides a trilogy is the best way to go. You know, episodic was his original intention, right? And it is, but it was a trilogy. What trilogy existed before Star Wars? Right.
Well, I mean, there was the Planet of the Apes movies, but they weren't necessarily a connected hard story.
Beginning, middle, and trilogy, right? And so
Dr.
you
Zayas,
do that.
Maybe.
And then he has the prequel trilogy, and then we moved on to the sequel trilogy. And so now with this content creation, it's just crazy how much we're getting. And so is it going to get tired sometimes? Maybe, but I'm trying not to think of it that way.
I think that's a good way. It's a healthy, healthy attitude to have. And again, this isn't a podcast. You know, one of the great things that I think about Fan Effect, as we've done this now for 7 years, coming up on 7 years that we've since we started this podcast, one of the hallmarks of it is we celebrate fandoms. And so, and yes, there are parts of fandoms that, you know, can get upset. In their defense, I'm never a fan of toxic fandom. Like when you start telling other people that they shouldn't like something because you didn't like it, that to me is a step too far, but you feeling like it wasn't the quality that you'd hoped based on your past experience, there's nothing wrong with that.
there's nothing wrong with feeling like I didn't connect to this, because I mean, there are parts of this I could admit I didn't necessarily connect to. But then I also read other fan reaction and think, well, I certainly didn't have that reaction to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it helps when you talk about it. And that's why we're talking about it here. And the listeners are talking about it with their friends, their family, because when you're in a community of fans, it's a safe space to talk about things honestly and critically, but also to pump it up and just enjoy what you're watching. And that's what I love about Star Wars, especially. It wasn't as if, and you remember this growing up in the 80s and the 90s, there were fan groups and fan clubs, yes, but I wasn't part of a Star Wars fan club.
And I was never going to be able to travel to one.
Well, yeah, and I wasn't a big collector, and I didn't read a lot of the expanded universe. I just had some Star Wars toys because that's what we had, right? And I played with them, and I watched the movies.
Made them. Let's not forget that
my
part.
let me correct you. My dad worked for Kenner during the era. And his friends made them, and he was dabbling.
There is a difference,
he worked in soft toys, so he did tell me that he was working on the Ewoks toys for the Ewoks movies that came out after Jedi. So I'm guessing they fizzled quickly
before the dark times.
Yeah. So
he's
done some incredible
era.
Incredible toys, but yeah, I didn't get toys like Star Wars toys from my dad. But yeah, I'm excited today to talk about some of the fan experiences that I've had of late. That really, again, just make me enjoy it. And I'm so thrilled to live in an era where everyone can be as connected as they want to be. And you can kind of draw off of the fandom and the enjoyment and the happiness that other people have, too. It's just I love it. I love the fact that we can do that. Now, again, there's toxicity out there. There is way too critical groupthink sometimes out there. So it's important to avoid those parts of social media if you don't want to be drugged down into the mud.
Right.
But for the most part, I really enjoy critical analysis of Star Wars that leads to greater joy from it as well. Because I have so much joy in my life, my children, my boys, my daughters too. I enjoy it.
It's a good thing you added your daughters as an afterthought.
Now, I had to do that because my daughter Aspen, who's 10, always reminds me how much she loves Ahsoka. And so she has several Ahsoka figures, and various Ahsoka, memorabilia, I guess you'd call it.
Did she ever meet Ashley Eckstein?
No, and I've
she's
tried
come to FanX at least once, I think.
Yeah, and I would love to try and put that
maybe
out there into the universe.
Maybe she has. Maybe she'll come this year.
I would love to meet Ashley, and if Aspen, could meet her, that would be fantastic as well.
Well, let's talk then. It's interesting that you bring up, I jokingly referred to as the Dark Times, which was post-Return of the Jedi, but really pre
Return of the Jedi, by the way,
Empire
coming back to the movie theaters. I have to throw that out there
right.
as well. So we're going to go see that
in fact,
this weekend.
In the next couple days.
Yeah.
I hope
we got
stays
our tickets.
Longer than just Friday.
Yeah, I think it's a week. I think it's a week. Yeah. 40th anniversary.
I remember where I went and saw it here in Salt Lake when I was, I guess I was 7 turning 8.
I was a little young. I was 2 or 3.
We sat in the line through an entire screening because you couldn't pre-buy tickets at the time. And people were playing board games on the parking lot ground while they waited in line. And I remember I had to leave the movie during Luke's visit to Dagobah because we had waited in the line a long time and then the movie, and I just couldn't hold it anymore.
So well, it's a good memory,
then. I never got the whole Luke
Dagobah
interchange until
Dagobah's
later.
Dagobah's this wet planet, too. I mean, it was all in your psyche going, oh, I got to get out of here.
Well, so we've got the 40th anniversary. A lot of Star Wars stuff. We've got May the 4th coming up. In a week from when we were recording this. So a lot going on. So we needed some time to talk about what we've had. And let's start. We played the Mandalorian theme.
Yeah.
Let's go over the Mandalorian. Before we dive into some specifics of episodes, how did you feel overall as you watched it from start to finish? Did your feelings change? Did they stay about the same as you went through?
You know, I will say there was a bit of ebbing and flowing, I guess. But I thought it started off pretty darn strong. And now the problem is because everything's available at a click and a swipe, if you go back and watch season 1 or 2 and you go through the great arcs in those seasons and you try to compare it directly, you might think, well, how come Grogu doesn't have more to do here? And how come Din's doing this? And how come where's the big bad? Where's the villain? So those questions popped up throughout the 8 episodes. And we can talk about specific episodes, Jack Black, but talk about those things.
And we will.
But for the most part, I was riding pretty high. And I'll say after the finale still, watching the quality watching some of the direction. I'll mention Rick Famuyiwa especially. Oh my gosh, incredible stuff. Was there stuff to criticize? Yes, but overall, I will say that season three was enjoyable.
Rick Famuyiwa
and a
did
success.
The first, and then the last two.
The
episodes.
Last two, yeah.
And we
oh,
got a
man.
Bryce Dallas Howard episode in there.
Right,
we got
which
a Carl Weathers episode in there.
Carl Weathers, I thought, did a very good job in his episode. Yeah.
And so I know that series television is where a lot of actors get their chance to direct
for sure.
and get their Directors Guild cards.
Well, and I love that they want to do it, too. I mean, because obviously Carl Weathers loves, he's like one of these actors that loves to service a story and be useful. I know Harrison Ford always talks in those terms where he likes to work and service the story, and he's not real sentimental about it. But then when they get to direct it, then I think, well, you're taking some ownership, right? You're making sure that these characters who are entrusted to you for that 30, 40 minutes that you're doing right by them. So I always look for, now that we're used to, what, 3 years worth of Star Wars television, I look for something that I haven't seen before. I look for something that ties back to similar threads that we've seen before story-wise. I look for something where they're pushing the edge. And I thought there was all of that in this season. There really was. Again, I know there's a lot of criticisms and critiques about specific things, but overall, my kids and I really enjoyed it.
I wonder if some of the criticism comes from an unconscious feeling of like, you're always chasing that first high. I mean, that's the term I've heard.
Sure.
When it comes to things that stimulate your brain. You chase that first one. The first time you felt, you know, the first time you taste sugar, the first time you,
sure, yeah,
you know, you go on a roller coaster. It's like, whoa, I've never experienced anything like that. And then you always hope that there's some way to get back to that point. It's also almost impossible ever to get to that point, which is why sometimes things can spiral. But I wonder if some of the negative reaction is just a subconscious feeling from some people of, I liked how I felt those first few episodes of watching when Disney Plus premiered and we got The Mandalorian and we were kind of
what
like, we don't know
thing?
What we were still processing how we felt about the sequel trilogy and what they've done with Rey. And
well, it came
with the,
out like the week
the
before,
characters.
Didn't it? Or didn't we see The Mandalorian like right so, as Skywalker came out, Rise of Skywalker?
It was, yeah. So that means we're on 4 years of Mandalorian and three seasons. So you're right. It was 2019. I was thinking it was 2020, but it was 2019.
Yeah.
So we had The Mandalorian, which wrapped up the day before Rise of Skywalker. So there was,
which that was almost a problem for the sequel trilogy's ending, I think, is that once The Mandalorian came out and you went, whoa, that was spectacular.
Can't
and
wait
you
to
saw,
see what Rise of Skywalker is going to have.
And again, I won't knock Rise of Skywalker in the sense that if you go back and look at what I said about it at the time, I mean, look, I was crying at the end of it, right? Could it have been just Skywalker saga coming to an end, ninth episode coming to an end? But, you know, I reserve the right to alter my view of things over,
sure.
Like the horses on the spaceship and the, you know, not giving certain characters a fully fleshed out chance to exist in that world appropriately. I get it. But The Mandalorian was so good. Now, I want to say, too, like the television aspect of it, The Mandalorian was so good and the volume was such a new technology that nobody had any clue what they were doing. So the magic trick was totally hidden. And you're just blown away. How are they doing this? Now, once you get the behind the scenes and you go, oh, that's how they're doing it. And then it becomes,
yeah, once
well,
you do
are
that,
they
your
using
eye
it too much?
Out, or, then your yeah, eye starts to yeah. pick out the lines between
or,
digital backgrounds and the real characters.
Or if they're
the
going
foreground.
on set somewhere, or not, on location rather, oh, that's just another Southern California set. So we get kind
yeah.
of
the
jaded.
As you get older, the real world creeps
yeah.
into your enjoyment no matter what you do.
Now, however, I would say is, have you ever watched a TV show, any TV show? It could be a sitcom, a drama, whatever it is, over the course of a few seasons, over the course of each season, there are some dips where you go, what were they thinking with that episode? That didn't feel right. And the tone kind of takes a little turn. That has happened here and there with The Mandalorian. I would argue not huge swings necessarily, except for one or two this season, but that's okay. It's to be expected in episodic television. So maybe I'm an apologist here and I'm looking at it through rose-colored glasses. But I think understanding television and not putting it all on a big budget movie, which hopefully we do get in the next few years of The Mandalorian.
Sounds like we will from
yeah.
the
Oh, won't that be
Star
great?
Star Wars Celebration.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
yep.
I don't want to digress too much from that. But anyway, yeah, you said overall, what is my view? My view is, man, I enjoyed that season.
Okay.
Overall.
For me, it was, and I think this is why I brought up the chasing the high, because I do recall there were episodes in the first two seasons, and not just the end of season two when Luke Skywalker appears, which, you know, is a high that could certainly
exceed
what the start of The Mandalorian was, because it finally gave us some emotional closure, or at least seeing Luke not the way he was portrayed in The Last Jedi, getting to see him closer to the Return of the Jedi, Luke, which is what people were hoping to see. So I didn't feel that kind of a lift or that kind of a high. I never felt at any point watching season three that it was like, well, this just sucks. I didn't feel like what some people are calling filler episodes. I didn't feel like there were any filler episodes.
No, and to me, there's not much filler in Star Wars shows anyway.
If all our shows ever from now on are
it had
six
better
episodes
deliver.
Has to lead to the next, to the next.
Yeah.
That will get tiring, because then it will feel like we're having a movie broken up into parts. And while that was, you know, we grew up on episodic television when it was true episodic television. I'm going to use Star Trek The Next Generation as an example. There were moments in the series where it referred back to other moments in the series, but mostly it was the alien of the week or the planet of the week.
Yeah.
And, you know, the villain of the week, the mystery of the week. All of those things are a term because that's how television was. They were self-contained episodes. Now they're called bottle episodes because the rest of the story is telling a story. And then you have this one that's in a bottle that's different from everything else. So we've got names for both sides of it, but I'm okay with episodes that don't feel like they're going anywhere as far as servicing an overarching story, because as far as I'm concerned, I don't want the stories to end. So this doesn't have to build to something for me to enjoy it. It can be immensely satisfying when it does, vis-a-vis the Marvel movies leading up to Avengers Endgame. Now, since we don't know where the story's going, there's been
it's
a lot
meandering.
Less coherent. Yeah, yeah, it feels meandering. Now, maybe there will be something that ties it together, because there are shows and movies where, for example, the third what was the movie? The third movie in the trilogy somehow improved on the first two, just because suddenly things that didn't seem like they made sense were wrapped up. This is a silly example, but Bill and Ted Face the Music, to me, made Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey better. I didn't enjoy Bill
totally
and Ted's
agree.
Bogus Journey. I thought it was kind of
dumb. I loved it because I was 11, and man, it was great.
Right. And we talked about it. I think you were on for the Bill and Ted's. But then they came back with the third one, and all of a sudden it made all these things that I thought were pointless or disliked or didn't enjoy. Suddenly there was some greater meaning to it as far as servicing the story. In another movie that I did enjoy, so it was like, oh, that made that one a little bit better. There's another one that is slipping my mind right now, but there are times where a later chapter in a story can help make a previous chapter in the story better.
Sure, yeah.
And so that's why I don't want to jump off, you know, too hard when something doesn't go as much as I might like it. Like, for example, now I can remember what it was. So Star Trek Picard Season 3 made Seasons 1 and 2 more endurable. I thought Season 2 of Star Trek Picard, and I'm going to do a separate podcast about Picard, but the third one paid off everything and made the first two seasons better, to the point where I almost wondered, and I wondered this on Twitter, if season three had been season one, would I have enjoyed it as much as I did having gone through
to be able to tie everything?
I tell the kids, it's the dinners that you hate that make the dinners that you love taste better.
Well, and along those lines, I would say, what is it that we expected to see when The Mandalorian was announced and that it was coming out?
We had no expectations.
Think about it.
Because we didn't know anything about it.
A Mandalorian bounty hunter, and that very first episode, he pulls out his disintegration rifle and shoots a guy, and he's trying to get that thing off of his ship, and you're like, wow! This season, we saw like 50 Mandalorians flying all at once.
Fighting
100
in the
Mandalorians
air.
Airborne fighting a kind of Mandalorian hybrid stormtrooper, first order-ish looking. What? Like it? The levels of expectation, I fear, are getting to a point that cannot be sustained, because what else do we expect? Like it's now what I look forward to is blowing it out for a movie, spending $200 million on an incredibly believable movie. Yeah, that's the next stage. Sure, higher budget, just awesomeness, right?
Agreed.
But the show, I'm watching it going, look, I didn't love, you know, if I want to pick out a few moments, Axe Wolves and his Mandalorian crew on the Jack Black Lizzo planet sitting in lawn chairs and throwing a football. I'm going, huh? What are they doing? Like, are they?
It's not a football. It's probably like a Blurns ball or something like that.
Trademark, copyright. Did you just say Blurns ball?
That's from Futurama.
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't realize you took it from that. Okay, never mind. Never mind. Futurama has that already. But my point being, look, there's some tonal things with the Jack Black Lizzo thing. And at the same time, I really enjoyed that they went down and visited the Ugnaughts in the droid smithing factory. Yeah. I thought that was cool. There were cool elements of every episode.
Babu Fricks.
That was fantastic. What do they call it? Oh, man, what is that species?
We can look
it up. They kept alluding to that and mentioning the species. Greef Karga, again, played by Carl Weathers, was fantastic. I thought every time he's on screen, he's great. The bringing back IG-11. Having him house Grogu in a certain way, and the no and yes, and how Grogu got some autonomy was an advancement of the character. Until the very end and the last, I get they were trying to perhaps not overuse the Grogu Force connection, and if he decided against being with the Jedi, maybe that's his quest, is to be a Mandalorian, that kind of thing. But I just wondered throughout the season, so when's he going to do anything? When's he going to use the Force? When's he going to connect or save someone or something like that? So that was a bit of a delayed gratification to the very end. I wish they would have brought back Moff Gideon about episode 5, right?
Okay.
To allow for more of a development, right? So that would have been better. But again, these are, to me, small, minor complaints.
All right. So we'll take a break. We'll do an episode breakdown after the break, and we'll look up what species Babu Frick is.
Yeah.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Fan Effect, Andy Farnsworth and Dan Spindle from KSL TV, Channel 5 in Salt Lake City. We are talking Mandalorian Season 3. So we got Dan, I got your thoughts and some of the different insights that you had, some feelings you had as you progressed watching the Season 3.
Yeah.
8 episodes over about 8 weeks. Now we have to wait for some more new grown-up Star Wars content. We've got Ahsoka later this year.
Yeah.
So as I watched, it's been, first of all, almost 2 calendar years since we had new...
Which is crazy.
An episode of The Mandalorian. Now, we did have Din and Grogu appear in The Book of Boba Fett. So
right.
It's only been a calendar
year
since we've seen them. But it's been 2 years since we had an episode from them. And
that's crazy.
So when we get back, they advanced the story. I don't know if people have paid close attention. I didn't pay close attention until I was doing some online research. But this is not like each season hasn't just followed immediately on the steps of the previous one. We've gotten about 5 years into.
Yeah, they kind of had to say it at one point, didn't they? They said the years and you go, wait, years, 2 years? Or Jon Favreau,
well,
I think,
visually,
said it.
There are some things that give it away.
Yeah.
For example, how much Greef Karga's planet has changed.
Navarro.
So Navarro,
Navarro
you have to imagine.
Had gotten refurbished.
That took some time.
For sure.
But it's been about 5 years since the beginning. So now we're about 10 years post Return of the Jedi.
Yes, yeah.
And that's something that it helps to bear in mind, because if you're still thinking of it all as still happening in a very condensed time frame, then some of the stuff might seem confusing. And knowing that time has passed can help you maybe with some story points that you're kind of like, how did nobody notice this? For example, Moff Gideon disappearing. Like, how does the I forget the rebel pilot's name. Recurring co-stars. There it is. Carson Teva.
Carson Teva. I just got it. Yeah.
Paul Sun-Hoon Lee.
Carson Teva.
So Carson Teva, he finds that Gideon, he's like, what? He never made it to trial. Like, I feel like an Imperial moth that was menacing
people. It's a big galaxy. It's It's a right, big galaxy.
That somehow would have made news, but at any rate.
You know, post-Imperial Moff, who was kind of acting as a gangster, I guess you could say that, right? They're all...
A very classy gangster,
yeah.
Of course.
Oh, my gosh. Giancarlo Esposito is very classy. Yeah.
All right. So let's quickly go through. At first episode, we finally get them back together. We've got the Mandalorians and their dinosaur turtle, whatever they have
to
fight. Yeah,
that was awesome.
So we get to see how the Mandalorians induct their younglings into...
Yeah,
the ones who follow the way,
the children of the watch.
Yes.
I have heard this described as like the first season was a Western and kind of the epic nature of the second season. And this one goes into the more biblical realm, kind of think of Ben-Hur.
Okay.
And those types of, you know, because there were a lot of religious overtones and themes. I mean, you start with a literal baptism, right?
Or an attempted one. Before a big thing comes up out of the water. Like,
yeah, that was not
why
figurative...
Why are you shooting at them with your little spears, guys? Like,
yeah.
Maybe go into the cave and say,
just hide.
I don't think we're equipped to handle a beast of this size.
Well, it was, again, we were introduced to a lot of different things. what is that?
Beasts of unusual size.
But what was great about it was, again, touching on the themes of family and the themes of what does it really mean to be a Mandalorian, to belong, this cult as it's been described, is it really that, or is it something that roots them in this ancient tradition and ancient history? So I was enjoying just kind of exploring that, and Jon Favreau really opening that up.
Right, we get IG-11, they cut him down from the statue and sort of try to revive him, but then that leads to the need to have to go somewhere else. So then it becomes a little bit of a MacGuffin. We got to get the piece for IG-11.
But that's it. I mean, that's television, right?
No, you've got to be chasing something or else you're watching people sitting around talking like us.
So some of the criticism might have been in the later episodes. I said, well, what happened to that? And what about this storyline? So I feel like maybe some of the storylines could have been threaded through a little stronger because I did wonder about that. Oh, I guess they're not going to bring back IG-11. Okay.
Except for then they did.
And then finally they didn't. You go, oh, yeah, wait a second. It was seven episodes ago.
Get, like, smashed up? I had some questions about that, too.
That was tricky to follow, yeah.
But we also meet up with Bo-Katan Kryze, who's
correct.
Now officially a series regular, at least for this season.
Sitting by herself in her cool pose
on the throne, which she said she put a lot of thought into what pose she would be in when they walked in. We also get a fight with some pirates.
How
on
about
Navarro.
The pirates? I heard some critiques of those too. I kind of loved that first scene. And Vane, is that his name?
Yeah. Vane.
Boy, I like him. And I didn't. I don't know. At first, you don't know what to make of it. What is this pirate guy? I liked him though. I really did. This is adventure, right? They bring in westerns. You had the western theme and the western influence, and now you got pirate influence. I enjoyed that.
I thought Gorian Shard kind of looked like a mix of Pizza the Hut and the Swamp Thing.
Sure, yeah, kind of a Chia Pet looking. But you know, and they did. I think didn't he
I'm
say
not
like a vast
Mades kind of looked like that?
I mean, he said off the starboard bow. It was so on the nose, and yet. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I loved watching the Mandalorian utilize his N1 Starfighter again. His hot rod that he has altered. I mean, because that thing still just dominates. I'm still devastated that they destroyed the Razor Crest.
Yeah, because you have the toy.
I have the toy. Yes, I still love the Razor Crest. But having a maneuver with that, it was cool. R5.
As I say, episode two, we find R5, and we find that he's not. Although in comics, I believe they've showed that R5
apparently was
not just somebody that R2 messed with and screwed up. Like, he faked his own.
On purpose.
Yeah.
He did it for the rebellion.
And
that was enjoyable.
They called him the rebellion hero, R5.
Right. That's right.
But yet he could never get off Tatooine.
That's right.
So then we get the cyborg creature when Din goes to Mandalore for the first time.
Kind of Grievous-esque is what I thought.
Right.
Very, very kind of General Grievous, biological and yet not.
They didn't really do much with them after that.
No. But they had kind of those taser kind of, I don't know what Grievous's guard guys are and what. You know,
they were called
electrified staffs that they have,
right.
But it kind of used that too.
Mine.
It was cool. It was very cool. I liked it.
So Din then baptizes himself in the living waters.
That's right.
When he finally gets away, because Grogu helps him. The Darksaber takes a little bit of a turn here that will become an issue later on,
right.
or maybe not since they just crushed it at the end
anyway. It's done now.
We go to episode 3 where we get Bo-Katan saves and sees the Mythosaur.
We saw the Mythosaur. I'm sorry, I was waiting for the payoff of someone riding the Mythosaur over this into the skies of Mandalore to claim, you know, the...
No, we've already had a Mandalorian riding a giant beast in the Book of Boba Fett, so...
You know, it was kind of supposed to happen, though, right? That was to usher in. But it was fine. It was very cool to see, again, to get your mind going of, what does this mean? What does that mean? I did enjoy that.
But this is also the episode where we get to have more time on Coruscant with Dr. Kane... Dr. Pershing
yeah.
and Elia Kane, the former communications officer.
I could not criticize that one at all because I loved it. I thought the Andor feel, people called it the Mandalorian, like it was like Andor. I really enjoyed it because I was not familiar with the different goings on of Coruscant and with the peak, going to that park and eating the glowing popsicles and things. I enjoyed all the exposition that I got in that.
Mountain on Coruscant, And it's like a little hill in the middle of their city.
I loved it, though. I loved the exposition that we got throughout that episode. I really enjoyed considering the meanings of all of this, of the post-imperial amnesty program, which we'd never even thought
about. This is, again, the world building and the enriching experience, which is part of what we enjoyed so much about Andor.
And now we get to see it in the Mandalorian world a little bit more about what's going on outside of the Skywalker family and the main characters that we're seeing. Like, it's a galaxy full of people, and different people do different things. They go and eat ice cream pops at the park. They, you know, we hadn't considered until they started bringing it up in this episode, we hadn't considered, what did they do with all those Imperial people? You know, you and I talked about this just kind of like quickly.
Did they just execute them? I mean, they did.
Well, and that was the thing. So what do you do when you've defeated the Empire, which essentially, you know, was the government on all these different planets? And what do you do with all the people? You know, you got to figure out, are they all war criminals? Do you say, like, hey, look, you lost? And this is apparently what they did. Like, if you're willing to sort of be repatriated, we'll put you through an education program to where we'll resist your evil urges to love the Empire, which is essentially what it was.
We had that Mon Cal there at the end that was comforting and creepy all at once, saying, oh no, this is not a mind flayer. It's
more like of a mind massager.
Right, yeah.
So we had that happen, and that's where we left. It turns out that our lady, Elia... Is that what
Kane,
her name, right?
Yeah, Elia Kane.
Elia Kane is not changed back, even though apparently Dr. Pershing was willing to sort of embrace the whole New Republic thing. She sets a trap, is what it turns out to be. Oh, yeah, no, you need to go get your stuff. He gets his stuff, and that's when they bust him, and she probably is the one who turned him in the first place so she could wipe his mind.
Yeah.
I just think they were a little too trusting with Elia Kane. Can I just stay here with the mind flayer? Oh, yeah, sure.
She sure seems sinister to me, yeah.
Right? So that's what we get. He gets his mind erased. We don't know yet how that fits in, at least as we're watching the series. So then we get to the next, to episode 4, The Foundling, in which case Grogu fights on the beach against another Mandalorian foundling. At this point, Paz Vizsla's kid gets snatched off by the dragon.
Yeah.
And Din and Bo-Katan lead the crew to go and bring him back, in which case now the... The Coven, is that what they're called? Aren't they called like a Coven?
A Covert.
Covert. The Covert of Mandalorians now accept Bo-Katan based on the creed.
That was something else.
Were you surprised by that?
Well, I enjoyed it just because, I mean, good character growth in the sense that Paz Vizsla and Din Djarin had been at odds and physically fought each other before. And this was a way to connect them forever because you know when the Mandalorians get connected because of something that had to do with honor and duty, they're connected, right? And that's what he kind of says to Din Djarin, like, you know, okay, we're good. Bo-Katan, you actually thought for a while, and maybe she did question her own beliefs, but you're going, wait a second, is she going to buy into this? Is her helmet ever going to come off again? Like, what's going on here?
And if it doesn't, how bad? Because Katie Sackhoff is very pretty. I mean,
it's true.
I'm going to go all the way back to Battlestar Galactica.
Well, I was wondering about, you know, the armorer is also... you know, attractive and
has never
taken off her helmet because, you know, Din Djarin, Pedro Pascal got his helmet off. Others have taken off their helmets and they kind of carry him around. So I wondered if the armorer at some point. Now, that was the interesting thing about the middle of this season, thinking whose allegiance is to whom, what's going on, is someone going to double cross someone? So I was questioning at that point, is Bo really buying into this? Or is this all a ruse so that she can seize control of Mandalore and the Mandalorians or something like that? You know, and it didn't turn out to be so.
Well, and this was also the episode where we got the redemption of the actor who played Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had a flashback to
Ahmaud Best.
The night of the Purge,
yeah.
The Jedi Purge,
yeah.
And Ahmaud Best gets a chance to play the Jedi Kelleran Beck.
Yes.
And he single-handedly saves Grogu almost, gets him out, gets him off to a shuttle where he can get away and survive.
A Nubian still have, shuttle, a shuttle that's from Naboo.
Nubian. We haven't seen what Grogu has done for the last 30 years.
Right.
Like, he's still in the little pod like a baby.
Yeah.
When we see him in the first episode of The Mandalorian, which is 25 years or so after the Night of the Purge.
Yeah.
What happened to him all that time? Did he just get passed around in his little egg? Was he in hiding? How did he end up in the possession of, I don't even remember who had him in their possession at the beginning of episode one. Was it the scientist dude?
Well, it was some sort of bounty hunter group, remember?
Right,
because
Mando
we didn't know and
where
IG-11
he was.
Had to go, yeah.
So there's a lot of story that can still be filled in, but we see that he got away from the Jedi Temple. I'm always loving when they flash back to somewhere in the prequel trilogy, but
well, the redemption
it brings
for,
up another question.
The redemption for Ahmaud Best as an actor, too, because you know, that to me, I was emotional during that, and I explained to the kids what had happened, and I was probably part of the Jar Jar hating crew, where I did not like Jar Jar Binks, and I did not like The Phantom Menace. And I can say now I do. I enjoy it as a nostalgia kick, and I enjoy Jar Jar. I mean, he's fun, right? It's not what we expected. It's not what we wanted. And yet Ahmaud Best was the first motion capture actor ever, right? Even before Andy Serkis.
Yep.
He did a fantastic job. Everyone at Lucasfilm anyway, thought it was going to be the next big thing. And he didn't know he was going to get death threats. Right, he didn't.
Which
know
is
that,
what a ridiculous
it,
thing to threaten death over.
But
you played a character I don't like. You should die.
Well, and that's what's so great now about modern fandom. I think is that look at how much love he's getting. I mean, he shows up at a celebration or at a Comic Con. My gosh, they're going to go nuts.
Oh,
same thing with Hayden Christensen. Hayden Christensen got kind of panned for his, oh, it's Obi-Wan. He's holding me back, and I hate sand and whatever. And they thought it was like a flat performance. And the fact of the matter is,
Dan Spindle thought that until he met him.
Well, I did meet him. That was great. That was a great moment. But did you see him at the recent Star Wars celebration? He broke down. He was emotional, had tears because of the welcome. And that's what it is. Star Wars is when you're one of us. Then you're one of us, right? And
right.
It's, you're our hero.
You should be,
you're
anyway.
Our guy. You know, and it feels like there's so much more of that now than the hatred that's online. And there are spaces for that celebration, Comic-Con, and podcasts like this, you know? You can just enjoy everything about the saga.
Here's something, and this is going to make me old man Andy.
Okay.
There's some things that you're meant to vent to, like, you know, your journal, your diary.
Right.
That's where you should vent a lot of these things. Not to every single person that's available
well,
on
that's
the planet.
That's what social media is, right?
I realize that. That's what I'm saying.
It became that.
If you're frustrated with Star Wars, write it in your journal.
Yeah, and or talk to your friends.
But
we can talk
about
it.
The good news is when you come to Celebration or when you come to FanX here in Salt Lake or anything like that, generally that negativity stays outside.
Celebrate
the door.
It, man.
And so it is nice to have the celebration moments. And it is cool to see the actors. I'm not an actor. I don't work in Hollywood. I don't know the characters in the way that an actor knows the characters because they know them because they had to inhabit them for a while.
Sure.
But even in that, they were playing Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi while there was a camera right there and there was a green screen right there and the lightsaber didn't actually light up and they were just holding a stick or they were just holding the hilt. So their experience with the movies until they watch them is going to be completely different than it is for us. I know this is obvious stuff I'm stating here.
For sure.
But you got to remember that when interacting with them and, you know, when they get to have this. So for them to break down, it's almost like I remember playing the part even as far back as the original A New Hope, the revered and loved A New Hope. As the actors were making it, they didn't have John Williams' music in their ear while they were saying the lines. Somebody, I think were you and I talking about this, but somebody said there's some YouTube videos where they've taken the music out of Star Wars
and
then
funny.
Played it. And you see
Star
why.
Star Wars without Williams. Yeah.
Yes, you see why it was harder for the actors to pull it off or why
to pretend,
when they
yeah.
complain about, like, you know, Harrison telling George, you can write this stuff, but you can't say it.
Yeah.
And Luke saying, like, I memorized it all, but I didn't know what any of it meant.
Right.
And they're like, this is going to be a bomb because there was nothing epic about it as they were shooting it. It was
right.
with problems. They were dressed in garb that they didn't know. They were seeing words that they'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
And they essentially just had to believe that the soft-talking guy with the beard that just kept telling him to do it faster knew what he was going to do and was going to pull something out that
right.
turned out to be good. And then, you know, Mark Hamill's talked about how he sat in the theater and was like, was this the same thing
Holy
we made?
Holy cow, yeah, we did that.
And Hamill's always been an appreciator of the different aspects of movie making, whether it's the directing
sure.
or the music and all those things. So when he says that, then you're like, okay. But then when, you know, Harrison Ford came to Star Wars Celebration, because they were talking about Indiana Jones also, and I bet even his crusty old heart melts
yeah.
a little bit
sure.
with the fan reception and the excitement. And I, you know, I hope it does anyway.
Right.
Because, you know, I try to keep 1 foot grounded in reality, but, you know, meeting Luke Skywalker in person, like, yeah, it's not Luke Skywalker, but it is.
Right, yeah.
And so there's something about that. And the fact that some of the stars have embraced it, I didn't laugh. I laughed a little bit because I wasn't surprised in the slightest, despite Daisy Ridley's protests 3 or 4 years ago that was good. She's done with Rey. I'm like, yeah, you're done for now.
Right. Yeah. And who would have thought it would be so quickly, too?
I am a little surprised it was this quickly, but
good for her. I was in love with Rey immediately.
Character. All the characters were great.
And John Williams' score had a lot to do with that. Rey's theme, the dun, 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 dun. Oh,
oh
my
yeah.
gosh. I loved her first scene. I thought it was a misstep in The Last Jedi where she didn't feel like she was acting as well. And I really thought that there was a problem with the storyline a little bit because she didn't fully embody the Rey that we thought we got. And the Rise of Skywalker was kind of like, well, now she's spinning 50 rocks around her. Like, okay, you know, there's so much more with Rey that we can do. And I love Rey. I love Daisy Ridley. I love that character. So I think that would be very good. But yeah, that was... look, like you said, look, the faces, the voices, and the storytelling, everything that they put into it, even if they can't see the final result, that becomes a part of our lives.
Yes,
I hear singers and bands talk about their songs, and they say, the good ones say, and I've heard recently there was a 60 Minutes with like Red Hot Chili Peppers, and they say, look, these aren't our songs anymore. They are your songs.
Yeah.
It's your life. It's your memories, the smells and the sights and the sounds that take you back to a moment. They play it for us. Right? Same thing with those who make Star Wars, the good ones. And I think Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni get it.
Yes.
It's part of our lives. And that's why we're so hung up on little details and critical and things, because we have an emotional connection to these things.
And we want it to be real. And when there's things that the story doesn't agree, it makes us realize it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't watch it because we want to say, oh, well, this definitely isn't real.
We just want to
watch
the
it because we want to just sort of disappear into it for a
exactly.
little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's true. And so we got a chance to give Ahmed Best, you know,
it was great.
Makes you wonder
Loved
what
it.
Happened to his Jedi after that. It makes you wonder, you know, where they hid Grogu. It's good because this gives another jumping off point to a future story
for
to
sure.
Tell.
Yeah.
And so that's just takes us to the halfway point of the season. Bo-Katan gets her armor replaced with the Mythosaur logo this time
yep.
instead of, would you like the owl on your...
Yeah, yeah.
How about one of each? And so now we get to Chapter 5, the pirate. Now we get Gorian Shard. We revisit him. He's come back to Navarro to take
laying
some
waste on Navarro, yeah. That one lacked a little bit of heft because of the fact that it looked like 26 extras running around a few different camera angles, you know. I thought they could have done a better job with that, of making
like
it look
there was
like
more people
townspeople.
On the
yeah. And then
yeah.
Greef Karga, now that we've made it into the wilderness, 17 of you, like, wait, what? This is all the people of Navarro who escaped with Greef Karga? There were just not a couple dozen people, maybe, you know, and they could have done that a little bit differently.
The rest were hiding underground. Yeah.
Again, it's television, so I give it a pass.
Isn't Cobb Vanth on the planet somewhere?
Well,
he's on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got mixed up between my planets. All right.
How
so, yeah, Cobb Vanth, he would have helped totally if he'd have been there. So the Mandalorians overcome the invasion. They take out Shard. Vane gets away, unfortunately.
Yep, of course.
I wonder if we'll see him again.
Of course we will.
And then we finally, the armorer says, Bo-Katan, you can live in both worlds. You can take your helmet off.
I thought that was kind of a trick, you know? And that's when I started questioning the armorer. Like, wait a second. Who's trying to pull something on somebody else? Like, maybe she was trying to find an excuse to fight Bo-Katan or something. I thought maybe that was setting up a confrontation, but ultimately it didn't.
I saw a lot of online chatter right before the final episode that believed that the armorer was in league with
Moff
Gideon, because they both have horns on their helmets.
Yeah, the horns, yeah.
And that they believe that Darth Maul is the true.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean,
but that would get really convoluted.
There's a sense of logic, but
yeah, for the casual fan,
the only reason it would work is because Dave Filoni's involved with this series,
sure.
And he's been good at.
Well, but you'd have to go back through a lot more lore of Mandalore and the Clone Wars, and that's just a lot, I think, to saddle it with. Even though I was excited,
as
I talked to my sons, we were excited about that. Ooh, these are Mandalorian or Maul loyalists, and you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there still could be something done with it. There's never been any explanation of why those two have horns on their on their helmets that's come out yet anyway. So there still could be some truth to that.
And then did we get the Lizzo episode after that?
Yeah, so I was going to say, now that we get to episode chapter 22, episode 6, Guns for Hire, and they go to Plaisir 15 with Captain Bombardier and the Duchess, Lizzo and Jack Black.
Yeah.
What did you think when you first saw them?
I mean, at first you kind of get excited.
Did it feel
because,
stunty to you immediately, or did...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole season was kind of stunty, but without giant stars. I mean, you had Tim Meadows show up, which was kind of odd.
Right.
I mean, they have got a lot of comedians that show up in the show, and it's fun. But very quickly I was kind of rolling my... Now, I did tell...
Who was the bigger stunt?
Lizzo.
Lizzo?
Sure,
Jack
yeah.
Black or Christopher Lloyd? Because remember, he was in this episode,
Christopher,
too.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I wish Christopher Lloyd... I wish they would have done up any of them. Make them look interesting. I thought they phoned it in a little bit. Lizzo was like, here, let's put a digital train that she's carrying around like a veil on a wedding dress or something. And Jack Black was like, well, let's twist his beard and his mustache a little bit. Okay, but why don't you do something fun? Do something interesting. Christopher Lloyd, too, was just kind of there.
Why didn't Jack Black play the Star Wars version of the electric guitar?
Now, that would have been a stunt,
know.
Too. Well, I heard that Lizzo might have played the flute and that got cut or something, because she is a...
Right, she's a flautist.
Look, the whole thing tonally to me was... That was the problem with that episode. But having said that, I enjoyed it. As I watched it, I was like, okay. They're going way out in left field here. But I didn't turn it off. You know, I didn't,
right.
I didn't say, well, I'm done with this show.
Well, how about the droid bar? It was literally the reverse of the scene on A New Hope, where the droids walk into the human bar.
We don't serve your kind in here.
And it's flipped around where humans walk into
a
droid
bar. Look,
you had
a blue protocol droid, which was awesome. You know, I just thought some of the visual aspects of that episode were really cool. But, you know, it was fine.
So I liked
going to the
Ugnaughts. That.
Yeah.
We also had Bo-Katan fighting Axe Wolves for the leadership, and she beats him.
Okay.
In a fight on a sunshiny day.
Yeah.
It was a bright sunshiny day for Bo-Katan, but
Not
so much for Axe. Did you think at that episode that there was going to be some point where Axe's resentment would then harm the group later on?
No.
Never did?
I wasn't that interested.
I thought he would be
not that he's not that interesting
like
a character.
Or something for
they
a
had brought him back so late in the game.
It's almost Wolves, but there's
Axe
no
Wolves.
L. It's Wolves.
And what's the other one's name? The WWE star, what's her name? Because she was on there too, but didn't say anything.
Oh.
Anyway, Sasha Banks is her stage
I don't remember
name
what her character
anyway,
name is.
Look, it was okay. I thought that the stakes in most of the season were pretty low, and so in that one I was kind of like, oh no, will they bring the Mandalorian?
The callback to the Separatists, because Hellgate was a Separatist.
It was all right. It was all right. Yeah.
It was.
I mean, then we went into the final two episodes, right? Because that's where really they hit the gas, and I felt like, wow, I guess they turned this around quickly. You know,
so immediately in episode 7, the second to last episode, we meet the Shadow Council.
Fascinating. Loved it. Loved it.
With and now you haven't read Heir to the Empire, so
no,
you
I've
didn't
never,
recognize
I only
that
knew
name.
Thrawn...
The immediate moment.
Well, yeah, no.
When they said Captain Pelion, I was like, yes, we finally
I didn't
get to
know
see Pelion.
Pelion and.
He's the first almost Imperial character you meet in Heir to the Empire. He commands Thrawn's flagship.
So I was just thinking of the Ahsoka trailer where she said, he believes he is the heir to the Empire. And I went, oh, there's a big nod to all
the
expanded universe.
So this is the first real tie to, we had Thrawn in Rebels.
Right.
And anytime you use Thrawn,
but they labeled
direct...
all that stuff Legends content, right?
Okay,
this isn't really canon anymore.
The events that happened in those are Legends content.
Right.
But they've shown that they're willing and able to pull from characters from it. Including, and this is where we tie into Rebels, or excuse me, The Bad Batch. The several episodes they go to a mountain called Mount Tantus.
Yes.
Which was the cloning facility in Heir to the Empire that Thrawn was using to try to clone soldiers and was going to clone some Jedi. And
interesting.
So, again, references to Heir to the Empire. I don't know if Timothy Zahn, the author of those books, gets any royalties when they do this kind of stuff.
Probably not.
I hope he does. And I also hope, and I'll have to look in the credits closer, I feel like he should get a greater, like, bigger, more prominent titles where it says
right.
characters created by Timothy Zahn. Because
sure.
he did. Like, I don't know. He probably would never say publicly, but I don't know how he feels when they borrow his characters but don't borrow his stories.
Sure.
He has rewritten books about Thrawn that are considered canon. Thrawn and then Thrawn something or other. I actually own both of them, but still got to crack the covers on those.
Yeah.
but I have them. And so he has rewritten Thrawn in the current canon, at least some of his story. But as soon as I heard Captain Pelion, I was like, yes.
And Shadow Council looked awesome.
It was an Easter egg. I use air quotes because yeah. it's not an Easter egg for anybody who read Heir to the Empire.
Sure.
But it's kind of an Easter egg because they don't overtly say, hi, I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn's captain guy.
And how about the tie to the sequel trilogy with Hux's dad? That was Hux's
exactly.
dad,
yep.
which was so interesting to just all the – I loved the tug of war between warlords for resources and, you know, honestly trying to figure out what is the balance here and what is our role. And it was kind of like the five families of the mob or something where you pay respect and you divvy up resources and yet you could cut their throat. I mean, that's what it kind of felt like. And so having Moff Gideon, though, in the middle of the Shadow Council, I thought, man, I wish they'd have brought this back two episodes ago, you know, to have a little bit more development.
Because
he is the big bad, and he really proved to be.
Elliot
look at
Kane
him. Look at his
is
new
still
armor.
Wandering around in the New Republic. Too,
oh, how about when she met with that probe droid in the alleyway?
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Visually speaking, a lot of that stuff was awesome.
Just great.
See? Scary.
All right, so after we meet the Shadow Council, then Grogu gets IG-12 as a gift from
Fantastic.
Reef Karga. No.
Yeah,
that
yes,
was pretty funny.
Yes, no.
But that was pretty funny. A little gimmicky, but I don't mind it.
I loved it, because how else do you move Grogu forward?
Yeah, I was going to say.
They keep saying, well, he can't say the creed, and don't make him talk. I'm like, no, don't make him talk. He's a baby still. He's a toddler at best. So he's not going to have a helmet on like a Mandalorian. He's a little green Yoda creature, okay?
Having
so
him
to
not
give
talk
him autonomy,
to not do the creed is a good workaround.
Yes, and it was great to give him some autonomy. He could move around. He could help out. It was great.
And so then they go back to the Great Forge on Mandalore now that they know that they can go to the planet. And this becomes the retaking of Mandalore. They get there. Everything, they're looking at the Forge, and all of a sudden, the Beskar enhanced.
Well, they met the survivors first. Those guys who'd been on Mandalore for years.
That were loyal to
right?
Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
That's right.
They'd been scrounging living there.
The surviving clan, I believe, is what they're called.
But then, those stormtroopers came in that looked, the helmets sure look like First Order. I mean, really close, kind of the morphing now between clone trooper, stormtrooper, to the First Order trooper. So, yeah, and like a green tint. I really liked those. I mean, it was they were great.
And we had a reference to, if you didn't know what the Praetorian Guards were by reference at the beginning of the episode, then you recognized them at the end when they walked out straight out of the throne room.
Yeah,
from,
they were Snoke's peeps.
Snoke's
that
private guard.
They fought better in this one. I mean, look, the whole Paz Vizsla death scene, which again finally gave some stakes. I was heartbroken. I mean, it was... he went out like a true Mandalorian.
He shot till his gun melted.
Oh, boy. It was so...
And then he threw his gun at him.
It was a very Baze Malbus off of Rogue One. You know, Imwe and Baze Malbus, which their connection in that movie makes me emotional every time. And Baze goes out like a tough guy. I mean, loyal to the end, right? I'm going to close this door and I'm staying here. You get out of here, you know? And Bo was devastated. And it was awesome in the most heart-wrenching way. Right, and they killed him viciously.
They
it was
killed
a vicious,
him dead. They stuck all their
vicious,
instruments into him.
Devastating kill. So they seemed.
I shouldn't be laughing when I say
that.
Well,
they seemed scary though. The Praetorian Guard didn't do anything in Last Jedi other than fight Rey and Kylo and lose. Right,
and I mean, they were a little late to protect their master too.
No kidding. So you kind of thought, well, that's
still,
pretty
that
cool.
Was an awesome fight.
Oh, agreed. I still agree the fight was great, but in this sense, they were death, right? Were the Grim Reaper.
This makes what Rey and Kylo did more impressive.
For sure.
It's one of those things where a later chapter.
With Kylo Ren,
right, but it's one of those times where a later chapter can make an earlier chapter better by what it represents.
Agreed.
They were hard to defeat. Even a Mandalorian couldn't take them out by himself.
Taking out Paz Vizsla.
Now, There's plenty of haters that'll go what I was just going to ask. But okay, so we get to the final episode of season three, The Return. We've got Bo-Katan trying to get away from Moff Gideon's base. They get back to the flagship, and then they realize that there's more people coming.
Yeah.
They need to rescue the people who are still wandering through the base, which I think is just Din and Grogu at that point, right? Because everybody else got out. I feel
there at that time? Yeah, they were still running around.
But as Din and Grogu are trying to find a way out, they stumble on Gideon's cloning tanks.
Wow, yeah. I thought they were going to be Snokes for a minute. Yeah,
before that's what I thought too. Maybe a Palpatine.
Well, and attempt. Also on Navarro. Navarro had the Imperial space where they had the clones there on that base.
Oh,
those were the Snokes there. Remember that?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got clones happening all over the place. This ties into obviously the Bad Batch, and
I like Gideon. I'm not cloning. I'm not interested in cloning at all.
Except
that's what he
for
kind of
me,
said to the Shadow Council
with the Force.
Well, but that's why he zapped. That's why he had Ilya Kane zap. Because I wondered, why is he frying
so that
Dr. Pershing's brain?
Any...
Oh, because he doesn't want to share any of the knowledge with anybody. He wants the cloning for his own purposes to make a super Jedi army with himself as the leader, you know?
Multiple times.
Yeah.
He's leading himself, having dinner with himself.
And that gets eventually into the Palpatine cloning, where Palpatine apparently had several bodies that they tried to utilize in his dark force.
We haven't seen any threads drawn directly to Palpatine. They're only seem to be establishing that cloning still exists in the Star Wars universe. It didn't end.
For
and
nefarious
that's another
purposes,
thing. That's another thing from the Bad Batch. This is where the Bad Batch teams up, is at the end of season one, it was the destruction of the cloning facilities on Kamino.
Right, yeah.
And then an attempt to kind of cover that up is a thread that runs through season two. And there's a senator, since you haven't watched it, there's a senator who is trying to find out the truth of what's really happening with the clones, the... Tarkin and Mas Ameda, the advisor to Palpatine, are all trying to get this new one passed where they use stormtroopers instead of clone troopers. And then what happens to the clone troopers? Well, there's supposedly a program, a farm you out kind of program, but it's not really happening the way they're promising. And that's what the Bad Batch stumble into. And so they're trying to uncover that. And then they're getting sent to the clone facilities on Kamino or on Mount Tantus. And so there's all these threads that will, I think, eventually draw together. We keep seeing characters from animated appear in live action. Ahsoka was chock full of those.
Well, we didn't even talk
about
Zeb.
We haven't even talked about Zeb showing up. Yeah.
Oh, Zeb showing up in that bar was,
I was like, what?
I bonded with my kids over Rebels for years, and that kind of reignited a Star Wars fanaticism, right? And seeing Zeb there, one of my boys, they all got Rebels Black Series characters for Christmas, and my son Porter got Zeb, and he pulled Zeb out that day, and look at him, he looks just like him, and I thought they did a fantastic job. Spent a lot of money, you can tell, because he looked great. He really did look great.
So the battle begins between Moff Gideon, Din and Grogu.
Yeah.
And then Bo joins back into the fray. First of all, how cool was it watching aerial battles between the Dark Troopers and the...
Incredible.
I thought that was one of the visual highlights of the final episode.
Again, Rick Famuyiwa did a great job with direction on those last two episodes. Just masterful.
They're going to have to be careful so that Beskar doesn't become sort of some like invincible alloy.
Right.
Like you're going to have to figure out what's your median. Can you shoot through it or can't you? Because essentially, are you essentially laser-proof if you're wearing Beskar, or are you not?
It's almost like if you have a flak jacket on, if you have a bulletproof vest, and it hits you, and you can get knocked down or knocked unconscious even because of the force of it.
Well, but that brings up another question. Does the laser bolts have any physical force behind them?
Well, it feels like the laser bolts can affect you physically even if you block the initial... death blow of a laser.
I think
bolt.
We're getting into the weeds here. Probably better.
It's
we
all
don't think
pretend.
About that
so
much.
What we just said is
it's
fact.
True.
Now.
It's fact.
It works.
As much a fact
right.
as anything else.
Yeah, we just
right
said
now.
It. So it happened.
The Praetorian guards are defeated. Finally.
Yeah.
Grogu. Okay. Let's talk about the final battle since we've hit the hour mark on the podcast.
And I have to mention one more thing about my trip, too. So.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to get to all that. I promise. Yeah, I promise. Yeah. But let's talk about the final battle a little bit longer terms. What did you think of how that played out? Like, not just the visuals of it, because I thought the visuals were pretty cool.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Darksaber getting destroyed?
I don't know.
Is that a symbolic? It's a symbolic thing, but is it a good thing?
I hope they don't just destroy everything that they think is cool that then they must get rid of, kind of like the Razor Crest. Let's blow it up so that you really feel it. Okay, that hurt. Let's get rid of the Darksaber because then there's no reason to. I mean, I get it.
Well, as far eliminating as plot symbolism, I get the idea of like, because they made a big deal of talking
it,
about.
Yeah.
At this point, we don't have to worry about who fought who and who got it and who's the rightful owner of it. It's smushed.
Yeah.
And now that the Armorer has thrown her support behind Bo-Katan, people who were previously loyal to Bo-Katan, everybody's kind of united. Now you don't have to have the symbolism of the Darksaber. But it is a pretty cool weapon, and I hate to lose cool weapons.
And a cool weapon that was, I mean, was it created by Mandalore the First? I mean, or who was it?
Supposedly it was created by a Mandalorian Jedi.
It's been around for thousands of years.
It was created by a Mandalorian Jedi.
But that's the thing. That's been around for thousands of years. Now it's busted up. The Razor Crest was pre-Imperial, so it can go through these scans without being detected. Like, and then they blew it up. Like, okay, I'm like, I want the stakes to be high. But quit blowing up cool stuff.
Okay, so like, Grogu takes on the Praetorian Guard by himself. Or at least he distracts them to give Jim
sure,
a chance
yeah.
to get up. And then he just sort of hops around on the lights.
Yeah.
And the Praetorian Guard, who took down Paz Vizsla, can't manage to like knock down the lights or something.
Right, yeah.
I know, Star Wars is for kids. This was definitely a kid moment. Every kid wants to think they could beat all the grown-ups. That's why you watch stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would call it lazy, but it kind of seemed like...
I didn't say lazy, but it was
No,
and
I'm throwing that out there just because the way that Moff Gideon went out, he blew up. Okay.
Well, they did that so you could conceivably he could be alive, or maybe there's a clone somewhere and you don't know if it's the clone of Gideon or if it's Gideon who survived the fire blast.
I hope so,
he was
yeah.
in full armor. His mask wasn't off. I don't know. I mean, at some point, fire melts Beskar anyway,
for
right?
For sure. Or else they
Isn't
wouldn't
that
have
why
a
there's a great
yeah,
forge?
Well, and they wouldn't have a fire, flamethrower on the in their weaponry.
Right. But what did you think of Grogu saving him with a force bubble?
It happened before. So it's probably a callback to season one where he saved him from that fire trooper on Navarro when he came in to smoke him out, blast him out, and Grogu stood there and saved him from the fire.
Okay.
It was good. I was just happy to see him use the Force again because he hadn't used the Force really all season. The first season, he held up a mudhorn with his hand, right? And supposedly he went through a year or was it
of
2 years
with Luke?
I mean, so I would have liked to see more Force being used without having it be the go-to every scene. I get that. But, I was okay with it. I was okay with it because finally someone, Grogu, did something to come to the rescue in this season, which he hadn't done yet.
So they survive. Probably best you don't ask too many questions about how and how they got out. And if you crash a Star Destroyer into a planet and there's somebody that's standing near the crash scene, how long you got to hold a force bubble? Do you lose oxygen? I don't know. It looks cool, though.
It looks cool,
and you got to save them somehow. So, fine.
Yeah,
relight the Great Forge.
Yeah.
Din adopts Grogu officially, so now his name is Din Grogu, which tells us that Din is the family name and Jaren is his first name.
Yeah.
And Grogu is
I thought that was cool.
Grogu's first name, so now we know for sure. And he begins some honest contract work, pitches to Carson Teva that he should take care of the stuff the New Republic can't really officially get into.
Right.
And then he gets a cabin and he sits on the front porch with his feet crossed and his little kid playing by the frogs.
Yeah, close it with like a circular reverse wipe or whatever you call that. Yeah.
So we don't know anything about, and then IG-11 becomes the replacement for
The Marshal. Yeah.
I guess she's not
Fine.
Coming back. I thought I heard she was. She is not. But IG-11, don't ask me. I thought IG-11's body was crushed by the Praetorian Guard and then melted when the Star Destroyer hit
it. The Anzellans got some pieces, okay? The Babu freaking Anzellans
got some
pieces.
And it was, what's his name's voice again? It was
Taika Waititi. Yeah.
So the good news is we get to have some more IG-11 fun.
For sure.
With his hip-swiveling target
Love
marksmanship.
It, yeah.
And we'll get to have that again. So that wraps up Mandalorian Season 3. there's been whispers online, offline that Pedro Pascal may not return to the role. I don't know. He's in high demand right now.
He is. He's working a lot, and he did not show his face at all. And they've got
so maybe all they need him for
Brendan
is voice
Wayne,
work.
You know, John Wayne's grandson, who's in the suit a lot of the time. You know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Brendan Wayne is in the suit a lot of the time. It's stunt work. He's a stunt man.
But
and there's another actor too. I think there's two of them that are typically in the suit. So
you only need him for the voice.
Yeah,
James Earl Jones.
And he talks like that. Yeah,
you saw him on Saturday Night Live where he told about where the. Where the voice came from.
What did he say?
Well, he said, you know, people want him to do the voice. And he goes, it's a little weirder when you're not in your helmet. And he goes, and I really invented the voice. It was kind of a bedroomy voice.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I can bring you in warm.
Or I can bring you in cold. That's right.
He says, and when you're talking a bedroom voice to a little kid, people give you a weird eye.
Hey, look, I love Pedro Pascal. And if they, you know, you'd hear the difference. So I hope that he finishes off whatever it is, season four
can
or
he
five,
sell his voice to the voice collective?
I mean, we would hear that too, probably. It would sound too AI at this point. I don't know. I hope he comes back. I think there's going to be, what, five seasons, hopefully.
I do know that the next season, at least the next season, if not the next two seasons, John Favreau's already written. So.
Right.
And then we'll have a big movie. And then we have the movie that was announced.
Directed movie.
Okay. All right. Well, so that wraps up The Mandalorian. So let's take a break here before, because we can't have a show where we don't at least hear about Dan Spindle taking a trip to Rancho Obi-Wan in California and seeing all the great artifacts from Steve Sansweet's unparalleled collection. So when we come back, we will talk about Rancho Obi-Wan. Fan Effect final segment as we talk Star Wars, The Mandalorian Season 3. And now, Dan, Lucky Dan, gets to go to a place that I've only read about in Star Wars magazines and I've heard about. And I fancied myself somewhat of a Star Wars collector. I stuck mostly to the action figures. But, you know, once you get pegged as a Star Wars fan, for family gifts, all you get is Star Wars stuff after.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But it becomes a little unoriginal after a while. And they give you gifts that you wouldn't have bought, but they like, oh, he doesn't have this. I bet he'd like this stuff, Jar Jar Binks. You know,
right.
Like, there's a reason I didn't buy that. But Steve Sansweet has all of that and more. He has like everything. He is what, if you've ever thought yourself to be a Star Wars collector, he's the one where you're like, yeah, but he's a somebody. However big you think your collection is,
right.
There's always one bigger. There's always a bigger fish, as Qui-Gon once said.
A bigger fish.
But there is no bigger fish when it comes to Star Wars collecting than Steve Sansweet. So
it's
tell
true.
Us, Dan, first of all, how'd you get there?
Well, the first time I ever heard of Steve Sansweet was in the, I think it was 2005 documentary that appeared on the 2011 Blu-rays, which was called Star Warriors. Great documentary about when George Lucas was asked to walk in front of like 500 stormtroopers in the Rose Parade. Okay. So the whole idea was let's get the 501st Legion, you know, the actual cosplayers, and they can march with George in the parade. And Steve Sansweet appeared in that documentary as the Lucasfilm, I think it was the head of fan relations or something. And it was like, cool, that's a cool guy, Steve Sansweet, a guy who was originally a Wall Street journalist. I don't think he was a columnist. He was a journalist, a Wall Street Journal journalist, newspaper man. And he ends up working for Lucasfilm, and I think he worked for them for 20-plus years. And the cool thing about his fandom is that, again, he never stopped. He didn't have to because he just kept building and building and building.
That's nice.
I think it was about 15 years ago. I'm going to get the dates wrong, but something like that, 15 years ago, he purchased some land outside Petaluma, California, which is north through Marin County from San Francisco on the 101.
Well, one thing that collectors know is that at some point you reach a spot where you have to figure out, what do I do with this stuff? I got to display it or I got to store it. And then even storing it becomes an issue because, you know, your collection is building. And so this is a natural thing what Steve Sansweet did.
His progression was, I'm going to buy this land with chicken coops on it. And so it was this house farm, beautiful area, really kind of feels small town rural because you're not in Petaluma, which is a small town in and of itself, but you're outside of Petaluma and it's in the rolling hills. in California's Northern California, beautiful, kind of near wine country, near actually where Skywalker Ranch is located, just, I don't know.
Outside San Francisco.
Maybe 10 miles, within 10 miles of the borders of the sprawling 6,000-acre Skywalker Ranch where Skywalker Sound is. And so it was just, it was cool being there. You felt that you were there. This is where George Lucas grew up. This is where he got his inspiration, you know, in Marin County. And so being there was cool in and of itself. The idea to go was my son is graduating high school. He's a super Star Wars fan, as am I. And yes, I kind of created that in my children. I kind of forced them into it, right? But Jackson, my son, has built himself, and you can check my social media. He's built Stormtrooper armor. It's actually Shore Trooper from Rogue One that he wore for Halloween, and then he took it and thought it was deteriorating. It's made of cardboard, so he plasti-dipped it, and he's preserving it, and we've got it on a mannequin in our basement, you know, displayed.
That's
incredible.
Awesome.
He painted it himself. He also has made he worked at a store, and they had this extra roll of carpet that was white, and so he took it, chopped it up, sculpted a hand, sliced it, put blood on it, and aged up the fur and made a severed wampa arm. So that's on the wall of his bedroom.
Nice.
That's my son, right?
Okay.
And he collects Black Series 6-inch Star Wars action figures.
Okay.
And so I said to him, he was just looking for one last hurrah. Let me do one more thing before my senior trip or before my senior graduation. So I said, how about a trip with dear old dad? And I asked my wife, I said, do you want to come with us to go to Northern California?
You don't
want
to come
Rancho
with us,
Obi-Wan?
Do you? It's probably how you
she
phrase
said,
it.
I tell you,
you
what.
You don't want to come with us,
you boys go do your thing. So it was just me and my son who just turned 18. We were there on his birthday. And we went, and I'll start first with, we went to the, I'll just mention it briefly because it's so cool, the Walt Disney Family Museum, which is in the Presidio area where you can look up to the Golden Gate Bridge. It's right on the water's edge. It's immaculate, spectacular federal land that's a park now. It's called the Tunnel Tops Park. And what happens to be a stone's throw from the Walt Disney Family Museum is Lucasfilm, the campus. So we started off on his birthday.
So this was a pilgrimage.
It really was. Well, we decided if we're going hard, right? So we went to the museum, the Disney Museum, which I can't recommend enough. It's spectacular for any Disney fan. You must go there. And from there, we walked on over to the Lucasfilm Yoda Fountain, which is one of the Yoda fountains found in the world. There's like
right.
five of them.
You see it in establishing shots
yeah.
for a lot of things.
Well, so we decided
have to do with the making of
let's
Star
take
Wars.
A picture by the Yoda Fountain. And then we saw a couple dudes kind of walk into this nondescript doorway. We thought, well, can we go in there? So we went in there, too. And this guy says, can I help you? And I said,
sure.
Yeah,
what
first
is this
of all,
and where
yeah,
are
I
we?
Said, where are we? And can we be here? He goes, this is the Lucasfilm lobby. You're welcome to be here. No video, no panoramic shots. Don't shoot out these back windows in case you see anything. You can take still shots and feel free to explore the lobby. So first of all, before we even go to Rancho Obi-Wan, we got to explore the lobby, which is just cool. Cool sculptures. R2
Why do you
is there.
Think they have some of those restrictions.
Well,
why no panoramic
something
shots?
Could,
you can take still shots, but
I don't
no
know.
Panoramic?
I don't know. Good question.
So you're not spying.
They don't want you to
stuff?
Manipulate I anything.
Know.
I don't know.
Oh, well, maybe.
So we took
what
pictures.
What could you
by,
take a picture of?
Well, we could take pictures of anything.
No, you
just
said out
pictures.
That you couldn't take a picture
well, through
out
the,
that way.
Through the window, they are connected to ILM. They might be bringing things back and forth. You know how on set,
right, right, right.
Star Wars, they cover everything up.
But what did you see is what
well,
I want to know.
Anything.
Oh, there wasn't
no, his thing
there?
Was just the general rule is oh. you do not shoot out the windows. That's
okay.
all. Don't shoot out the windows. So we didn't because we wanted to be not
right.
escorted off the property.
Exactly.
So the fact that we are in the building that's connected to Industrial Light and Magic, awesome. I mean, we're just in awe. Cool sculptures, cool books, a great setting. R2-D2, Darth Vader, full size, you know, cool Darth Maul bust, K2SO sculpture. Just awesome. It was so cool. So that started off our Star Wars Jones, I guess you could call it. So then the next day we drove up. To our specific time. Now, you have to make a reservation. You have to buy tickets online, and they do not even tell you the address until a few days before. Like, you can't look it up. Look it up on Google Maps. It doesn't
for
exist.
Suite?
For Rancho Obi-Wan. Yep.
They you text can't. You the address a
yep.
couple days before?
Because I was getting antsy, and I emailed them, and I never got an email back till I got the form email that said, get ready for your trip to Rancho Obi-Wan. Here's the address. Don't park next to the neighbors. Here's the gate code. You're going to do this and that. I mean, it's... Again,
how do you even like get in touch with them in the first place?
I emailed, but again, they didn't email me back. They just emailed the form one because, well, you can go on the website and buy tickets. That's
oh,
what you do.
Okay.
If you secure your spot and buy your tickets, then they contact you, right? With your contact information. So we get there. The dumb thing is.
So you pay your money and they might contact you back?
They make sure that they tell you also specifically
make sure you waste a lot of time because you can't come early. Don't come early and hang out. We got to respect the neighbors. It's a narrow road. It's a narrow road up to this rural property, okay? So we were at the Target store looking for some Star Wars figures. My son bought a Gamorrean guard, really cool, 40th anniversary, great articulation. I digress, but it's awesome. And I look at the clock and I go, okay, it's 9:58. Let's drive on over for our 10:30, because it was about 10 minutes away from there, for our 10:30, reservation.
Right.
And then I look at the email. It's 10. We have 2 minutes to get there. Oh, no. And it's so specific on how the tour is going to go. We raced over there. We were 10, 12 minutes late. Thank goodness Stu, who's one of the kind of property managers, was there. Hey, I guess you're Dan and Jackson. They had our name tags ready to go at the gate. The gate has an Obi-Wan Kenobi etching in metal. So you go into Rancho Obi-Wan. It looks like an old chicken coop. And you're going, okay. We parked. He goes, the tour just started. Help you go on inside. Now, I will post these pictures and videos on May the 4th. I thought I would hold it and reserve it for that.
I feel like that's appropriate.
But here's the description. You can hear this descriptive audio track with me talking about it while you watch it. But you walk in a crammed little space.
Can you take video or is it?
You can do anything you want. Video, okay. Pictures, anything. Yep. And they say, please tag us. Please talk about us. They love it, right? So we go in, and one of the curators, the docents, his name was John, I believe. And he's this old school Star Wars fan showing us through. And we get into this hallway and there's all kinds of posters everywhere. Really unique, cool posters. And everyone's got a story. And we talk about it crammed in this little staircase. And then he says, here's the only bathroom
now,
on the tour.
Steve Sansweet doesn't conduct the tour, right?
Now, hold on.
He doesn't conduct the tour, though, right?
No.
Okay.
No. He can, I guess, if he wants to. But we get into this little hallway and there's a bathroom. And he says, "The first off, know that this is the only bathroom. But second, everybody has to go in a weird way, one at a time, while we watch everybody and check out what's in there." And we go in and it's just a stack, shelves of every Star Wars personal hygiene item that's ever been created. Toothpaste.
That's
and
a good place
mouthwash.
To display it as any.
Oh, so cool. So we're like, okay, but it's crammed in there. I don't want to call it a hoarder space, but boy, some of this stuff is just crammed because there's so much stuff. Then you walk down the hallway and there's a library. I love books and I love Star Wars books. Oh boy.
Are there more than you thought of Star Wars books?
Oh, thousands. And I can't even describe to you some of the gems that are just laying on shelves going, what is this? Incredible stuff. I mean, one of it is called the Frames books. True Star Wars fans will know. I wasn't aware of this, but they came in a special custom wooden frame that George Lucas wanted designed, and it's got a Yoda symbol on it, a metal kind of a medallion to it, affixed to it. And they're long books that were made very poorly, so you're not supposed to open them up often. So they go, okay, we're going to pick two random spots, and I can only open them and then show you, and everybody can take a picture. And I didn't realize what a big deal that was, because the Frames series books, they only made 1,138 of them. You get the number?
1038.
Yep. And that's all that exists. George Lucas has one. Steve Sansweet has one. And that's another 1,000
people
on Earth.
And then 1,136 other people.
Which is pretty rare considering Star Wars toys or anything that's Star Wars to only make 1,000 things. So anyway, they show us some great stuff in the library. And you're not rushed at all. We spent a lot of time there, a lot of time in this little hallway. And then he says, and now for some cheesy special effects. Welcome to the Chocolate Factory. That's what he says, right? And I'm getting chills thinking about it, because if you're a Star Wars fan, he pushes a button and it goes, and he opens
nice.
The door, and I swear to you, you go numb, and you walk in and watch your step. You walk down these stairs, and it's Xanadu. I mean, it's holy cow, what am I looking at? And it's sensory overload. So thank goodness that first room. Now, I didn't know if that was the only room or what. But it turned out it was the first room. That first room, you have to pause and just, because they're talking to you the whole time. Any questions, sure, you can ask them, but they're going through all the little cool things that you're seeing on these shelves and walls and hanging from the ceiling and figuring Dan and the modal nodes that came from a store in Las Vegas when it shut down, from FAO Schwartz, or this N1 Starfighter hanging from the ceiling, or Darth Vader, where they call him, oh, this is Frankenvader. See the inner cape and the codpiece. Dave Prowse wore those in the original trilogy, and this cape was worn during Sith. And I'm like, what? Like, for Star Wars fans
props.
And collectors, they have real movie props. They've got a door that was on the cantina in Tunisia. Okay. They've got rugs that were, I mean, just everything you're looking at. And he said, now listen, some of the stuff in here is worth $1.50. Okay.
Right.
But it means something to Steve or one of our docents.
In fact,
and he picked it up somewhere.
He used to do in the Star Wars fan magazine, he used to do a thing where people would be like, hey, I have this.
Yeah.
Is it worth anything? And he always
is very careful to point out in every article. He says, if it means something to you, then it is worth something. He goes, does it have a dollar value? Maybe, maybe not. But if it means something, because like you shouldn't
collect
just for the dollars.
If it speaks to you, collect
it,
right?
Yes.
Well, and so the things on the shelves, I'm talking so many things from other countries, things from specific characters. There's a section for BB-8, which is kind of funny. There's some Jar Jar things. There's some, I mean, everything you can imagine.
Does he have the famous Jar Jar sucker? You know what I'm talking about? The one with the tongue where it opens up?
Oh, I don't
know. You're supposed to eat the sucker and it's like his tongue sticking out?
That
would be one of the things I would ask you, Fuzzer. Do you have, does this thing actually physically exist
and
do you have one?
Well, the thing is you could ask that question and they would know. That's the cool thing is that the docents make it a point to know almost everything about almost everything. Now, you can't know everything about everything that's there. Oh, so cool. So we go through this room. We were in that room for maybe an hour. And I'm telling you, like an hour, going through every last little thing, asking questions. You know, there's mugs and, you know, just everything you'd imagine.
What was the thing that you saw that you most desired to have yourself? If he said, Dan Spindle, you can take one thing from this place to keep.
I would say the fine art.
Because
there were, I'll tell you about the fine art. Or I'll get to another thing. The fine art was spectacular. And we're talking a bust that is a foot and a half tall of a Gamorrean guard or a Palpatine or a battle droid, full-size battle droid.
What would you do with that?
Gorgeous. Display it, right? Put it on a shelf in your house, right?
Okay.
Some of the other stuff, though, he goes, okay, in this cabinet, here are the pieces of the original Death Star. I mean, you're going, what? So I took a nice little video of that. Yeah.
For the special effect?
Yes. And the pieces of the original Death Star that were all kind of collected in little pieces.
That they put down on the ground?
And I shot them. Well, I shot them real close. And you've got gunner towers. And oh, yeah. Not only that, they said...
Did you run your phone like as if it was the next wing shot?
I ran my phone a little bit, but it's on a shelf cabinet thing. Yeah. But there were those. There were great sculptures. There was a Yoda made from the original mold. There was a Tauntaun made from the original mold. There were things signed by everyone from John Dykstra to Doug Chang and all these guys who create the world too. So that was incredible. We went from that room to like a fine art room, right? Then they roll back a curtain and you have a hallway that was created for Star Wars Celebration 4. That's the Tantive 4 hallway, basically.
Tantive.
And you get to stand, was that?
Tantive 4.
Tantive?
According to the Star Wars radio program, they called it the Tantive 4.
So you get to take pictures and stand up in the hallway and you look like you're on the spaceship. Then they do some more special effects where you talk to the wall and they say, hey, these aren't the guests you're looking for. Just let us continue on our tour. Then they open another door. And that last door, you go into another.
Is that the full warehouse where all his stuff is on shelves? Or have you already been doing that?
We've been going through everything. Yeah, this is the whole thing. You go through the first
room
warehouse
area.
Yeah, the next little room warehouse, and then the last room has beautiful. And when I say fine art, there was a painting that someone did, and I swear, fine art. A crashing Star Destroyer into kind of a modern U.S. city. It looked kind of like with the back of a kid's head watching, and he's standing in the street. It was the coolest thing, right? And they have all this fine art of stormtrooper helmets that they gave to ILM artists and said, do something with it. So one's an Ewok and one is a, like a Maul kind of character. So everything you're looking at is spectacular. Then they've got some snacks for you. Then they show you the arcade and they flip the switch. Hey, you're going to play in the arcade. They've got a pod racer.
Do they have any C-3PO cereal for you to eat?
Oh, they had tons of, they had cereal everywhere. You did not eat it, no. But so then they say, and now, without further ado, let's welcome in the man who created the Steve Sand Suite. And I'm going, some people kind of, I start going, yes, like, let's go, people. It's Steve freaking Sand Suite. Because for me, that's a big deal. He walks in. Anne is also one of the kind of curators. And so I'd heard of Anne, actually,
before. I haven't
heard
of Anne. Okay.
And she's a wonderful person. Steve comes in, chats with everybody, and then says, off you go. Play in the arcade. Look around if you want to and ask Steve questions. And I thought, well, I don't want to dominate his time immediately, but I look over.
Because
and,
I'm going
to. Well, nobody walked over to talk to me. He kind of turns. And so I grab Jackson, my son, and I go, I said, Steve, first of all, thank you so much. And let me brag on my son, showed him the collector stuff. Jackson wants to be an engineer slash maybe an Imagineer, maybe work for Lucasfilm. So he gets to chat about that. And we talked for 10, 15 minutes alone with Steve Sansweet.
Amazing. That's so cool.
Incredible. And so that's how it works. That's what you pay for. It's not cheap, I'll tell you right now.
I
want
to hear more about this arcade.
Well, the arcade, you can play as long as you want.
Finish the Steve Sansweet part
great
first.
Great Atari arcade games. The arcade Ataris.
Love the one that sit in?
you stood
the
and you held the controls.
Oh, I love that one.
And you had the pod racing one that has the pod racer controls that I was terrible
yeah,
at, but
I
my
played
son
that.
Was great.
I played that.
You've got the pinball machines. You've got probably about 10 or 12 fantastic Star Wars games. And
did you play Return of the Jedi arcade?
No, not at that point.
See that if I buy one of those arcade one-ups,
I would love the pod
that's
racer.
That's the Star Wars one that I want. The one that has Star Wars Empire.
Yes.
The laser. The
I've got the
raster,
super.
I think they call
I've got
it.
The Super Nintendo versions on an arcade game at home at my house.
Yeah.
So you can come
like
over.
Like when
play
you
that.
Unlock the Super Nintendo,
come on over and play that.
Yeah. Well, I have the MAME versions too.
Yeah.
But if I was going to get an arcade machine,
oh,
it would have that Atari.
Well, I would want the Battle
stick.
Pod. The Battle Pod that
one's
I looked. I think
fun.
It's about $4,000.
They have it at a local.
Got
arcade.
It at the mall, yeah.
At Boondocks here.
Okay, so to kind of wrap up my feelings on the thing, it's I'll tell you right now, it's like $85 a ticket, so it's
okay.
Not cheap. I just want people to know that.
I was going to ask you, how does he fund? Did you ask him how
it's
he funds
non-profit.
It?
It's a nonprofit. It's a nonprofit that does nonprofit work, right? And so I'm sure they can apply for grants like
oh,
nonprofits do.
Because he can
do.
Lend out the pieces for...
For sure. Well, that kind of thing.
Well, but
also,
I was going to say, well, how does he buy all the stuff that he's got?
I don't know. I don't
That's
know.
That's the question I have.
The joking thing they send you in your email, in your orientation email, is we are not responsible for your financial peril after you leave here and all of the things you will be buying now.
Because you want to
own
we after
are,
having seen
And
it.
They say we are the dirt poor docents and managers of this museum because what they do is buy stuff and they just buy. Now, everything in there, you got to believe it's in the millions of dollars. If it went to auction, it's
oh,
in the
yeah,
millions
no, no,
of dollars.
Oh, yeah, no. I believe that the full value, which is why they don't tell anybody where it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because to cost to security
yep.
to protect it,
yep.
I get that.
It
I get
was,
that.
I just say,
I'm
for
just
any Star
more.
Wars fan, do yourself a favor. Look, I took Breeze Airways out there. It was $40 per person each way to get to San Francisco. It was nothing. It really was.
That's awesome.
So we went on the cheap, quote unquote, as much as we could. It wasn't a cheap trip, but it was as cheap as you could do it. And my son and I had a blast. And it was, for any Star Wars fan, your head will explode. I mean, it's just, it's
my head's
incredible.
Exploding just imagining it.
Oh, it's great. Now, I'll post some videos. I've got a lot of videos and pictures, and I'll post those in an Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter post on May the 4th, so next week.
And what's your handles for people that they don't
at
know?
At Dan Spindle. I think Instagram is at Dan Spindle 15. Facebook is just, you know, Dan Spindle KSL.
Okay.
So, oh, that's what it is on Twitter now, too. It's at Dan Spindle KSL, because I work for KSL. So there you go.
Makes sense. All right.
It was fantastic.
Well,
yep.
Dang, that's making
time
me want
to
find
Road
a way
time.
To have to try to do that myself, because, yeah, I would love to see that in person.
Yeah.
And I have been a fan of State. When you told me Rancho Obi-Wan,
You said, hey, Steve like, Sansweet. Yeah.
What? You yeah. can go there?
Couldn't
I didn't know
couldn't
you could
have been
go
a nicer,
there.
Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Could
so how long did the nice. Whole thing take start to finish? You were supposed to be there at 10. What time did you leave?
They tell you that you have 2 to 4 hours is what you should plan on. I would say we were 2.5, 3 hours. So 3 hours in a
– So again, $85 for a three-hour tour?
Right. But like you said, though, it's a very –
you stranded on a desert island?
No, and it's a very small space. Again, it's not huge. And
how many people are on a given tour?
Maybe a dozen. Maybe a dozen tops.
And it's one tour a day, I would guess?
I think they do one tour a week.
Really?
I mean, I think it's only like every Saturday or something. And maybe they jack it up certain times and they do more. But when I looked at the available tours, I think it was just Saturdays, you know, or Sundays. I mean, just – it was awesome. It was awesome. I could not recommend it more. So go to Rancho Obi-Wan, folks, please.
Well, Dan Spindle, thank you for joining me for this episode. Where
thank
we
you.
I always love talking Star Wars. I've got you know, the content's going to keep coming. Star Wars Celebration told us about 3 more movies,
a bunch
more series. They're not going to stop with the content. We can always hope that it's good. Odds are some of it won't be as good as other, but
we'll enjoy it anyway. We'll talk about
and
it.
And we'll talk about it for absolute sure. Thanks for sharing with us your story of Rancho Obi-Wan. And you can look for those pictures, which he hasn't even shown it to me yet. So
nope.
I'm apparently going to have to wait till May the 4th also. But appreciate you, Dan. And we'll talk again as we get closer to Ahsoka. Maybe we'll talk on May the 4th. We'll
cool.
see how
Let's
that
do
goes.
It.
So appreciate you being here on Fan Effect. Of course, on Fan Effect, we love having you as listeners. If this is your first time joining us from a social media post or something like that, we invite you to check out our other episodes. Fan Effect, EFFECT. We have a Twitter handle. Instagram, our good friend Kellyanne, producer co-host, she maintains most of that. But we got more stuff to talk about. It's not just going to be all Star Wars, but certainly that's my first love, and grateful to have Dan with us We'll catch you next time on Fan Effect, sponsored by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters, the best place to see a movie in the state of Utah.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.